You know, it's like when you go to an airport, you know, you sometimes they call a few people because there are a few business class tickets or seats left, and they upgrade you. And so I got upgraded twice. So I told Doug I wanted to say a few words on some searches we're doing. So I said 10 minutes would be adequate, and it became a talk because I guess someone actually bailed out. And then Lynn, and so Yan Chin came and said, she's too sleepy at 9, so from business class I'm on to first class at this point. I don't know, I'm an early morning person, so the earlier the better. Okay, well, it's not a review. I wouldn't hardly call myself a practitioner of the extrasolar planet field at all. And there are things that either myself or some of my colleagues that we are working on. I just thought it would be useful because some of these techniques aren't really being discussed here for you to know. So the main focus is to look at binary stars. And the importance of this became very clear to me anyway, when even though it said 50% of the stars in binaries, it's very instructive actually to look at the nearest 100 stars. I mean, really look at them in the sense of, you know, make a look what people know, go through the literature, and you'd be amazed actually that, and these nearest 100 stars are important because that's where the searches, the most sensitive searches will be done. That binaries, trinaries, and all this, these things which are statistical become very real. And yet much of the effort right now is on single stars because it's very understandable. It's hard enough to find planets, and binaries are a bigger challenge. It's hard enough to understand planets in single stars theoretically because there seems 200 ways of making planets or not making planets. And so binaries add another dimension or many more. So, but these are very much here. And so I thought it would be useful for you to know. So there are three programs. One is we're using Keck high-res to do very precise radial velocities. And this is headed by Maciej Konarski, who's a Michelson fellow at Caltech. He's already demonstrated 20 meters per second on compact binaries. This is a sample that's not been looked at by any of the RV techniques, to my knowledge, or RV groups. And he hopes to get to about 8 meters per second. And the other one is the mirror survey, but with, in astrometry using the Ptolemy interferometer, where we have demonstrated 20 microarc seconds, and we think we can get to 10 microarc seconds. And finally, of course, is this program that I have a long-term interest with, SIM, which I'll just briefly mention to the end. Oops. Okay. The current searches, as Deborah Fisher summarized, are limited to single stars or sort of visual binaries, that is, binaries which are separated by, that you can see with reasonable seeing, that are greater than 2 arc seconds. And there's a technical reason, because the key thing in getting precise radial velocities is that you want to do very accurate or precise point spread function modeling, because that's how the velocity centroids you need to understand the velocity centroids to very high precision, and then you need long wavelength stability as you go for year, month after month and year after year. So those are the two things. You need precision PSF modeling and very accurate velocity calibration. And those are usually achieved by one of two techniques. The sort of the classical one, if you will, is sort of the Campbell and Walker technique. You put an iodine cell, which actually allows you to do both in one go. And the Swiss went for a different approach. You have a very stable spectrograph which solves that problem. And then this problem you address without the iodine cell by using synthetic spectra. Okay. The advantages and disadvantages, in the long run, this technique is, I think, will certainly be have a higher throughput. Okay, so as an example, if you look at binary separation versus distance to the binary, and reason it's distance is obviously these samples are limited by, defined by angular separation, which translates to different orbital separation. So it's, you have to plot this in the distance does matter. Whereas for traditional RV, that would not be an issue. You know, these are stars that have been discussed in this workshop. So all the stars above this line, which is the 2 arc second line, are the visual binaries, and they're slowly getting attended to. Then there are these speckled binaries, and this line is roughly 0.3 arc seconds. And these, as I said, for the technical reasons I mentioned, are not being looked at. Okay, so what's the difficulty in observing these binaries whose separation is smaller than the slit size? If you basically, at any given time, the spectrum is composite. It has two stars, A and B, and then the two stars will change. So in different ways. So and of course, that's what you want to find out. So the simple approach of doing the iodine spectroscopy really won't work. So the solution is really, in some sense, to go to the Swiss technique, which is use synthetic spectra. And instead of using one synthetic spectra, use two synthetic spectra. So instead of doing one correlation, cross-correlation, you do two cross-correlation, because you have to solve for both at the same time. And this has been done. This is Maciej Konarski's Keck work. And he's demonstrated with, you know, these well-known stars with planets in them, that with this particular approach, he can get to already 22 and 28 meters per second. And you might say, oh, well, that's an order we could do better than this, to probably in this particular case, probably to, I forget, 5 or 6 meters per second I saw yesterday, or maybe a bit better. But these have been used only with synthetic spectra, okay, or templates. So there's room for improvement, because the synthetic spectra are obviously not, there's some, the fidelity is not 100%, but it's remarkable that the two correlation technique actually works already, that you go from to this precision. Okay, well, then there's some other fun stuff you can do, which I'm somewhat interested in. You can start doing some stellar astronomy at a very high precision. You can really start addressing some of these issues in stellar astrophysics, which at a precision of a few meters per second, which haven't been addressed at all before. So, for example, if you look at some binary with orbital period of 5 days, you really can look at and improve the eccentricity measurements by order, perhaps in 2 orders of magnitude, and be interesting to see what it is. So this is to show that, in fact, it works on a SB2 binary.
So why is the RNS different for 2 stars, and it's the same spectral type?
Well, one is brighter than the other. I mean, they're not exactly the same. Yeah, the spectral, I don't know. I mean, the slight differences in the 2 stars, I don't think they're exactly the same magnitude. Okay, so this is a sample that Maciej is hoping to pursue, and you know, you don't have to absorb it, but there are about 100 speckled binaries which satisfy a small enough separation. It's hardest to actually go after things which are larger than this, because then they become comparable to slit size, and in fact, this is the same problem with SIM. SIM actually can either do binaries which are very compact, okay, by which I mean well below an arc second or well above an arc second, the range of roughly about a third of an arc second, or maybe even a tenth of an arc second to 2 arc second, is very difficult for SIM. Okay, so there will be some which will be a challenge. But then we have another technique for those. Okay, so the current approach is that demonstrably works at 20 meters per second. And so the next thing is to combine the best of both worlds, which is sort of iodine approach and the Swiss approach. And so basically what you do is you get with and without the iodine cell, then use iodine observations to get the PSF, okay, which is an empirical thing which you have to do anyway. It also does the wavelength calibration, because the iodine is a velocity standard. Then you cross-correlate the synthetics, then you divide out the iodine, okay, and then with the remaining bits of spectra, you cross-correlate with synthetic spectra. So you've sort of done the instrumental part, the PSF modeling and the wavelength calibration with iodine. Stuff that's remaining, you do the synthetic part. And this Machi has already achieved 10 meters per second, and it won't get much better. There is photon noise at this point. Okay. And there are two sorts of noise. One is the two stars are in some sense lying on top of each other, so one acts as noise for the other. And there's also some slight what I'd call as cross-correlation noise. Okay, because one star would in fact be causing dips, which the other star in some sense doesn't care. There are photons being absorbed. Okay, so if you get 10 meters per second, I would say this is success actually. Okay, so let me switch quickly to astrometry. Anyway, so this program, Machi started, it's been a year now, two more years, there should be some results coming out of this. And the planets looked at this, or found with this technique, will be somewhat different. There'll be some overlap. Remember, because our criteria is angular separation, and so the distance is unfortunately a free parameter. So we may observe a very compact binary, but at a greater distance is equivalent to a visual binary at a nearby distance. Okay. So you might wonder why we're doing that. Well, because of the second program, which is allows us, in fact, to solve for these orbits, which I think would be very interesting. Okay, so what's the problem with ground-based astrometry? Well, if you take two points, if you look at the rays coming from a star separated by a distance d, then the rays, when you look at the phase difference between those two rays, then the RMS phase goes as this distance divided by the so-called Fried parameter to the phi sixth power. And usually this is usually shown as a structure function, in which case it's phi third because the square of that. Okay, so you know, let's ignore this phi six and say, okay, so roughly this phase is increasing with separation. And that's why just getting a bigger telescope doesn't actually get you better astrometry, okay? Because you're getting more phase noise. But you do get one thing, which is you get better photon SNR, you collect lots more photons. So even though your PSF is still an arc second, whether it's Keck or a Celestron, you do collect lots of photons. So to the extent you can model the PSF as being very stable, you can, in principle, do a very good job. Okay, both of those are questionable statements because PSFs will vary, but nonetheless, bigger telescopes can and should do a bit better job, but not for the geometrical reason, but for the simple brute force, more light reason, okay? But there are new regimes that are opened up with very narrow angle astrometry, okay? By this I meant where people did the classical, you know, you build these refractors with very long focal lens, and so like MAP, you know, which is this survey that's been going on for a long time, looking at nearby stars, and it's sort of wide angle, and I'll tell you in a minute what I mean by wide and narrow angle. So adaptive optics and interferometry, which are very narrow angle techniques, they only can apply to a small piece of sky, but they do open up new regimes where actually the size of the optic enters. You want to be in that situation. When the size of the optic enters, then bigger the optic, you get a better PSF or a smaller beam, and your precision should go up. Okay, under what conditions does that happen? Well, in a classic paper, Shah and Colavita studied this issue, is to say, okay, let's not look at classical astrometry, but differential astrometry, if you wish. And what they showed is the error, in the sense the precision of, there's no photon noise on this axis, so but this is the precision. So just limit, if you have infinite photon noise, but just the atmosphere is the reason why you're not getting you know, perfect astrometry, then in micro arc seconds versus the angular separation of the two stars, you're trying to measure the angular difference at this point between two stars. And these are different baselines, 1 meter baseline, 10 meters and 100 meters. And what this shows, so let's look at this. Okay, all of them converge back to, you know, few arc seconds when you go into the wide angle regime, which is the point, you know, you could roughly understand by looking at the structure function. There are slight differences. The way they get to converge does depend on the baseline. So bigger telescopes at any given separation will do better. But eventually, when you go to very wide angle, they're all hopeless. I mean, this is really very wide angle at this point. Okay, however, if you are in this region, so let's look at one arc minute separation, then you are getting a big gain by the size of the optic here. Okay, and also more interesting, these are getting to be interesting numbers, you know, sort of tens of micro arc seconds. Okay, so the two regimes you can roughly think of are the size of the optic D, okay, and H is the height at which this atmospheric turbulence is being induced. So you compare the separation of the light beams that are coming in here from star 1 and star 2, which is theta H, and compare that to D. Okay, so this would be the in the very wide angle thing, which we'll no longer discuss, you know, you'd be really looking stars all over the sky. But in the traditional narrow angle regime, which is sort of more like MAP or equivalent thereof, you know, like the USNO program, you still are looking at separations where the two beams at the phase screen are much larger than the diameter, and therefore these things share very little in common, and that's why you don't get the advantage of D at all. But if you go the other way, okay, and this is slightly deceptive because this angle theta is very small in this particular case. If you go in the other way, when theta is small, then so you have to look at this beam versus, okay, so you're measuring this phase difference and then this phase difference, and then you ask, what are these two things sampling minus those two samples? And in the very narrow angle regime, you're sharing much of the phase differences between these two stars, and therefore you can do better.
For the second case, star 1 and star 2 are still at the turbulence height, separated by much more than R0.
Then there are two regimes in that. Okay. So if you can bring it less than R naught, which is what I'll talk. Okay. So in practice, yes. So you can. The trouble is that Sean Colbert used the word very narrow angle already without making that distinction. But there's a real distinction here you can make, which is sort of ultra narrow angle, if you wish, which is when this is greater than R, it still satisfies this condition, and whether it's above or below R naught. Okay. Of course, below R naught is when you get the ultimate precision. Most of these techniques right now are really aiming at less than R naught, all within the isoplanatic angle. Okay, so here's an example which is sort of not the case I just spoke that Martin asked. You know, it's this is a program that Proud and Chaplin have been doing at 200 inch, and you know, it's basically a traditional thing where they still look at small separations where the theta H, I think in their case, is actually less than B but greater than R naught. And they're getting, and you know, they're finding, there are some astrometric detections, and they are getting, looks to me, I don't know exactly how much is their precision, but my recollection is probably 10 or so of milliarc seconds. Okay. Okay, so the next one is, let's consider the case where theta H is less than B, but theta H also happens to be comparable or less than R naught. And that's where there's all the gains are. So here's a Keck AO image, and this is the very first science run with a Keck AO system. You know, and this is the reason why you want to be doing astronomy in my mind, because, you know, we got on this and we said, oh, we had a list of stars. We just looked at it and bingo, you know, it turns out to be this GL569A. The AB system turns out to be actually B has a binary. Okay, and then one of them is a brown dwarf. So, you know, the nice thing about building big telescopes, you can be a complete idiot and make a big discovery. And this is why we like to build big telescopes at Caltech. Because, okay, because then you don't have to think too hard. Otherwise, you have to be very clever. Okay, so anyway, we found this. So we can, then you can say, how well can you do there? Well, the precision of this is very high now. You're now into, you know, this is technically about, I think, 1 or 2 milliarc seconds with no attention paid to calibration issues at all. They've done it three different instruments to start with. And then you could show this one is a brown dwarf and so on. So this is the ultra narrow angle case now, okay, with steps being the very narrow angle case. And you can see we are improving, and that's the curve you saw where precision scaled both with the separation and with the baseline. Okay, so my feeling is if we really pay attention to this sort of stuff with AO at Keck, we can routinely do better than a milliarc second, routinely. But if you pay real attention, I think you can get to about 100 microarc seconds. Okay. Okay, so let me now switch to an example of this. So last year, Ben Lin and Matthew Mudaspa, Ben's finished up his thesis now at MIT. Matthew Mudaspa is a student at MIT. They demonstrated a particular, there's something called phase referencing, which I'll allude to, but they demonstrated that, in fact, it can be made to work in a more simpler way than had been originally thought of. So we started a program, and last year we put in a proposal to look at the stars at very high precision, and we got turned down, but for two reasons. One is we didn't have an acronym, okay? And other one is, you know, we focus more on how wonderful we are getting doing 20 microarcseconds. We're all caught up in the real stuff, and we didn't put in the one page of, you know, theoretical verbiage to sort of say we read all the papers and so on. But this year, we have overcome both. First of all, we thought very hard. And it's a very clever acronym because the acronym also has some meaning.
What theory is useful?
And then I decided to come to this meeting so that I can now duly go and, you know, put on a few theory names and say, well, I really learned a lot. These binary stars are actually enhanced by having a companion, contrary to some other, you know, ideas. They are not enhanced, and in fact, you know, this is critical and all that sort of garbage that apparently is a necessary part of these things. Anyway, so I hope you're all impressed with our acronym. I think this is very clever. Okay, so what's the technique? Well, technique is straightforward. You want to measure the angular difference between two stars in the sky, which are very small. Now, let's see what we mean by very small. The condition is that there, the projected beam separation, theta h, should be less than r naught. Okay? Now, that is sort of originally what we thought, and that's about 30 arc seconds at 2 microns. But this one, I don't know, it's hyper-ultra separation because we insist on less than an arc second, and that's because Ben Lane and Matthew Mudaspa. So technically, there's an advantage. If you want to do 30 arc second separation, basically you need to separate the light from star 1 and star 2, run the correlators and so on. And that's a bit, you know, that it's possible. That's what, in fact, we set out. That's what the Keck interferon is supposed to do. But it's within an arc second, then both the stars in the same beam. And therefore, you don't need the second bit of optic, so we can get going without any money because we've been pretty much running this with on a shoestring. Okay, so what do you do is you take the light beam. So consider there are two stars, but they're within the beam. So the interferometer has a, it accepts all the light within 1 arc second, which is roughly lambda or r naught in this case. Okay, so the two stars are in the same beam. You split the light. And then you, let's say there's one star which is brighter. Okay, doesn't matter, but that's easier to think that way. And then you, what's happening is this star is moving over the sky because of this RMS difference, which is very large. For a 100 meter baseline, it's 70 microns. So the phase fluctuations are inducing many, many waves of fluctuations. Okay, so that's the tradition, that's this great active tracking that Mike Shaw is famous for, is that, so you can track on that. If it's bright enough, you can keep yourself on top of the fringe, let's say for star 1. Then you split off the light, okay, meaning with the beam splitter. Then you use another correlator and you explore with a slightly, with a different additional delay. Let's say I know roughly where it is. And you explore the delay for the second star. But since you stabilize to the first star, you can do it rather gradually, and the photon noise and all these issues. And that's generally called phase referencing. But usually phase referencing, the conventional ideas are you really looked at two pieces, two rays on the sky. Either you switch back and forth, like radio astronomers do, or in optical, since you can't really switch back and forth on 10 millisecond timescales, you had two pieces of optic which separate the two things and ran two machines. And right now, this is sort of a cheap version. It is only one optic. You divide it, you lose light, but you can do it with what we have. Okay, so there are two correlators. This is standard Michelson interferometers, which measure the delay, one which is the active delay, and that simply tells you what the atmospheric air is. But the other one, it's the difference with that, that's what we care. We are not trying to do absolute astrometry. So as an example, you can see here's the delay as you vary the path length. Okay, you can scan through this. You know, this is the primary star and this is a secondary. And now this, there's a model and the data and they're exquisitely lined, so you can't see a huge difference where the signal is, and you have to just difference between these two delays in microns. Well, how well can this be done? Okay, so this now allows us to be 100 meter baseline, and then we are somewhere here. We should be a few microarc seconds. In fact, we're falling off this curve. It's an unexplored regime, actually. So the upshot is we're done 20 microarc seconds, okay, already. So that looked interesting. Looked interesting last year. This year it'll be interesting and intellectually all, you know, loaded with reasons. And then it turned out that we had forgotten a few things of how to do some. There's some part of the path length that wasn't monitored. That's been fixed. It's 10 microarc seconds now. Well, that's interesting. We can do a few things before SIM flies. Reason I'm interested is, first of all, it's cute. It's fun sort of things to look at. But the other thing is that it'll be a direct demonstration of this sort of microarc second sort of things before SIM flies, which I think is very important, just as a mean to reassure ourselves that. And of course, it's very, very restricted. Let me make no bones about it. It's very narrow piece of the sky. It doesn't address global issues. It doesn't address many, many things that are relevant for SIM. But should we find this, it'll be a good boost. But there's one other thing, which is why I'm even more interested, is planets found this way, we'll have a rough idea where they are on the sky. The problem with RV is you don't know where it is on the sky. You know roughly the radius, okay, but you don't know. So a lot of the techniques that people do for direct detection with RV, they have to be more general, okay? You don't know where it is, so you try to create a band where you'll find things. So they're nulling, there are some sort of phase apodization schemes and so on, which look for a large parameter space in the image plane. But if you know where it is, let's say I know precisely where it is, just let's make the argument simple, then I can create a very specific null for that point, which is much easier than trying to create a null for a much larger piece. So once you get into astrometry, the real gain will be for imaging is that I think, in fact, this will really allow us to go maybe a factor of 10 better than any current scheme using the same methodology, but because you know what you're doing. So that to me is sort of the fun part. You know, as you can see, I've never been too interested in the astronomy part. Yeah.
What about stellar activity? Wouldn't that mess you up on the
no.
Level of
microarc seconds? No. These are all long wavelength measurements. So the temperature differences are less. And we'll be typically looking at two milliarc seconds, 1.5 milliarc second things. We have enough information, I think. I mean, it's better. It's being done at K-band more than in the optical, where the stellar activity spots some stronger contrast. It may be, but I'd rather be limited by stellar activity than anything else. I'd love to be in that regime. Anyway, it's the last one. So I sort of already started working on some ideas that will go for direct detection, but very focused to knowing where things on the sky. I think there's some very interesting, I don't want to call it clever, but I think there's some interesting ideas there. Okay, so we have a sample, you know, we have this phase of sample, and so this shows the separation versus the companion mass, and these are the things found with radial velocity techniques for visual binaries. Okay. And so we are trying to show here, you know, there are two samples, is just some proposal. As you can see, we're already working to some proposal, and this is what we can find. Each of them is, if you do a 3-year survey at 10 microarc seconds, then these sort of funny looking symbols are the sensitivity limits of our proposed phase survey, and the black dots are things people have found with RV. Okay, so you can see that our parameter space is somewhere here. It's a standard thing. We are going after longer separation things where we will get to below Jupiter mass. Then we, on top of that, we've drawn a velocity curve here. This assumes 20 meters per second. Okay, but as I said, that was before we appreciated that Machi, in fact, has gotten clever and it's got to 10 meters per second. So we can do the same thing with Machi's technique, and then at least for some of them, we'll have the full orbit. And you know, should we find multiple planets, all this coplanarity, all that crap we'll be doing. I don't think I need to tell you guys all about that. It's pretty obvious. Okay, so here's some results. which show that the 20 microarcseconds, so this is simply the differential delay measured as a function of time. It's pretty amazing. It's so precise. Kappa PEG is a spectral single line spectroscopic binary we've shown. In fact, we now converted that into a visual binary. We actually, this is an astrometric signature, and so we can write a little paper on some of the interesting stellar things. In fact, in my mind, the most fun thing you can do with these two techniques right now is stellar astronomy at a precision that is one or two orders of magnitude better than anything before. That would be fun, actually. Okay, well, here's some sample. And this, it's not really limited. I mean, you can see that, you know, this is the fringe tracking limit. You've got to track on one guy to get out the atmosphere. That's the limit. But this is a small system. It's only a 40-centimeter sidereostat at a mediocre site. And, you know, we did the usual Hohmann-Weigert things and computed the maximum, you know, stable orbits, and then did some least square propagation, computed our minimum masses that we can detect in 3 years and all that. Okay, here's another thing which I won't go in detail. Okay, so this sort of got me thinking in a somewhat radical, I won't go into detail, but now we want to say, okay, where do I start? 10 microseconds for a lot of us is like, wow, this is amazing. It was there in the formula, but to see it is a very different thing. Well, then you have to start worrying, okay, anisoplanetism refers to the idea that, okay, as you go away, as an angle, as theta h is closer to r naught, you know, the phase errors become a radian, so that's anisoplanetism. And that will be the case as you start looking at separations which are wider. Well, there's good old photon noise, okay. And there's coherence loss because we're using a finite aperture which may be comparable to r naught. Okay, so these are things you have to now start worrying. Well, the interesting thing is that if you sort of say, if you're doing so well at Palomar on this, you know, little test bed thing, how well can you do at Keck with the outrigger array? Well, you can, at that point, you can get into the, for these sorts of objects, into the microarcsecond regime, you know. Anyway, that was the motivation for the Keck outrigger array, was to do the very narrow angle astrometry, that is separation less than 30 arcseconds. Okay, but the main concern really is, and this is a concern with SIM, which I'll end my talk, is that the problem with all these techniques is you have to find a friend within a reasonable separation, and preferably a few, because this friend may have companions of its own, may not be perfectly suitable, and you may want to have one sort of orthogonal so that you can both baselines can be understood. Well, by the time you start insisting on that, it's hard to find bright reference stars, actually. So this is a bit of a problem with the Keck interferometer. So I was thinking, well, okay, it's still a good thing to do, but why not start a whole new program in Keck, which is mainly focused to binary stars? Because A, the reference star problem is solved. We have it, okay, because by definition. And then we will get, I think, we could, it, this Palomar experiment, I think, is very, very, I was surprised how kinder the atmosphere has been compared to the expectations. So if I can do a microarcsecond, okay, let's say a few, well, that is the SIM thing. So, and these are precisely the kinds of stars SIM can do. SIM can look at stars which are 10 arcsecond separation. It can, but you have to spend twice the time. SIM can look at objects which are less than an arcsecond with some difficulty, but this is perfect for these objects. So why not sort of do a key project on this anyway? I've been thinking a bit on that. Okay, then there's some obvious points, but that are worth remembering. That is, obviously, RV plus astrometry is better than either. You'll say that's true, but I'll show you it's a little bit more better than you actually think. And the main thing is that they really allow you all inclinations. You know, there's the regard whether it's face on or that. I mean, I'm sorry, it may sound a bit obvious, but it's once you see the figures, you'll. And then, of course, the usual, let's get the orbit, scope, linearity, and all that stuff. Okay, so what you need here, there. So the question is, maybe we are entering a regime where the astrometry will start actually not competing, but will be comparable, in which case you want to look into this. So this work I've done with Josh Eisner as a part of his undergraduate research project some years ago. So let's assume 3 meters per second for the RV people, 100 microarcseconds for the astrometry people. Okay, in all cases, I think the distance is 10 parsecs or 15, I'm sorry, I don't remember now. And let's say 10 years. So these are the parameters. Unfortunately, you have to, you know, this is a multidimensional thing. So I'll only show a few and then you can think about this. And you have Jupiter and Saturn. Now you can see, if you use only RV, this is this dotted line, okay? If you use RV plus astrometry, this is the case. And their phase and edge on and so on. Well, you really are opening up a bit of a parameter space here. Okay, now which doesn't look interesting, but if I change some of these numbers to, let's say, 50 microarc seconds, okay, and 10 meters per second, because this is using Machi's technique, and this is still, I think we can actually do better than that. Well, you can, I'll leave this, you know, let the figures speak for yourself, but this is the kind of stuff that I think we can do with very, very easily at Palomar if you do for 5 years. But let's take the extreme example. Oops. Well, I guess our thinking is behind this, is a little ahead of these plots, because I was about to say, let's drop this to 10 microarc seconds, keep this to 3 meters per second, and in which case this curve is, where is it, I'm sorry. This should drop another factor of 3, and you can see that's getting very interesting with these sorts of orbital periods. Okay. Okay. Well, this was just to show you that what you could do with today, take any AO system on VLT or Keck. Okay. And that's actually very nicely matched to 30 meters per second. The only problem is, you know, this really doesn't get you too well into the Jupiter and Saturn range, but it's very good for brown dwarfs, which is why all these brown dwarf masses are coming out. Okay, so let me end a little bit on the mic on SIM. You know, it's a Michelson interferometer. It's 10 meters, it's not 100 meters baseline. It's optical, not infrared. It's very similar size to Palomar testbed interferometer. The field of view, I'm sorry, okay, it's 0.3 arc seconds, but there's a field stop of 1 arc second. So this is sort of, it's a bad regime. So we can precisely do these binaries on ground, if not do the same thing within a factor of 2. Okay. Okay, so it's a standard thing. We measure the delay, which is simply the dot product of the baseline times the direction to the source. Okay, well, you have to stabilize the interferometer, unlike ground-based interferometers, which are fixed. You know, this is floating around, so you stabilize by looking at two grid stars to get the orientation of B, okay? and then you measure C with internal metrology. And then with the third interferometer, you look at your target, which then measures S through this equation, so that you need three interferometers to make SIM happen. And if you do this, Chaz Bachman showed this, but I just want to put it back again, which, you know, there are two curves shown here, which is in green, SIM with 4 microarc seconds and SIM with 1 microarc second for 5 years. Okay, so this is what SIM should be able to do detection-wise. The reason we have 4 and 1 is... okay, I'll get to that, the reason why there's 4 and 1. But let me just say that the main problem, again with SIM, as with the Keck interferometers, you need to have reference stars, and they should be bright, preferably, and they shouldn't have planets, because you're only measuring the angular difference. So if you get a signature, you don't know which is which. Then you need another reference star, so you could say it's in pair 1, 2, but not in pair 1, 3, and therefore, or it's in 1, 2, and in 1, 3, and therefore likely in 1, okay? But that's sort of adding up. I mean, it's a slow machine. We're pursuing two things. The main thing that team is pursuing is looking at K-giants, which are distant, and the other one that I'm interested in, eccentric binaries, and this is a slightly theoretically motivated idea. If you have an eccentric binary, then, you know, simple Newton's equations of gravity tell you there won't be any planets over a certain range, and therefore you could use that as a very nice reference point. Okay, I'll skip all that. Okay, so let me end by saying the one I've been involved for a long time is this EPICS thing, and again, this is something where Scott remains on our team, and I thought he's the brightest guy on our team, so I said, Scott, it's your job to find a great and epical you know, name for this, and he came up with EPIX. It's a little contrived, not as good as phases, but anyway, we won because we already put all that stuff in and we had a bunch of theorists and all that. So, okay, so from someone like me who sort of plays, you know, is more interested in the toys and less in sort of all the details, I look and say, okay, 10% of these things have planets on some sort or the other with their current techniques. What are the possibilities? Okay, well, that's all there is, 10%. The rest are all duds, you know, they have no planets in them. Solar system is unique. Okay, but the other possibility is that it's very diverse, okay, which is, the, I think, the more likely possibility. Each technique is sensitive to a certain parameter space, they go find it, and this is the history of astronomy, or the sad story, or the fun story, where you do a technique, you find things, and then you think that's all there is to it, but I think there's diversity, and all you're seeing is what all you can see. So how do you address this? And this is a huge problem. So we have a so-called tier one, tier two program where we look at 100 stars at about a micro arc second. So this is like go for the gold, Earth, nature cover, beachfront property, all those buzzwords. But you know, should that not work out well, then we'll have 1,000 nearby stars at 4 micro arc seconds. And there's a very clever idea that the team has by which this high throughput can be achieved, which will actually do the astronomy that will be long lasting. So this is our team, and I'm in charge of the tier two program, and Mike Shaw is in charge of the tier one, and we are slowly now getting around to first figuring out this reference star problem, which no one has yet figured out, which could be a very serious problem, actually. I mean, there are ways to solve it, but that only at the cost of throughput of targets. We also start thinking a bit of tier two, which at least in my mind will be a very lasting legacy of SIM, you know, about 1,000 stars that will be done, quite different from what the phase space they'll explore will be very different from. So this is the part they will explore, and that'll be very different from this blue line here is the RV surveys, and this is tier two, so this is parameter space we'll go after. So with this sort of tier one, tier two, it's called hedging if you're trying to invest money in. With this hedge approach, we hope this will be a great survey. And anyway, sorry for all those snide remarks about your field, but that's what you expect from me, so. Okay.
With the RV survey, how close do you expect to get, and do you have special problems when the stars are moving around rapidly, or do they only come in when the stars are getting tidally distorted?
So yeah, that's a good point. There are some subtle problems at the level of, even at 0.3 arc seconds, if it's a nearby binary, because the PSF itself is changing. So in fact, when we go back, we have to worry about the position angle we put in, okay? We think we understand this, but this is yet to be demonstrated that. But for many of them, their orbital periods are large because they're at a greater distance. And therefore, to first order, we'll only see the, you know, gradual drift of velocities. And so in some sense, those are the ones we really want to go after. If they're too whizzing around and so on, right? I mean, you know, even I'm willing to accept basic theory that there'll be not many stable orbits there, so.
So you're mainly looking for circumstellar orbits, not circumbinary orbits.
That's right. What about one or the other, P or S, something, I forget.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I'll make one comment on why I think your ground-based astrometry is particularly valuable, and hopefully you've thought about this and can maybe expound numerically on the significance of the effect. SIM is a great mission in the sense it'll get really great precision, but it's a finite lifetime mission, and astrometry is most sensitive to long-period planets.
Yeah.
And so by extending the baseline, you are able to now be sensitive to longer-period planets even if not all your days are the same high precision. And it will also help with Earth mass planets in the terrestrial zone if they happen to have Jupiters at 5 AU and 12 year orbits. Because if you can pin down the Jupiter's orbit at 10 or 20 or whatever it is, or micro arc seconds, that can help you pull out a signal of a few Earth mass planet in a 1 year orbit that otherwise might be ambiguous with so few observations and small baseline.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, just because we'll do this at ground, it doesn't mean we'll not. Frankly, we will still do them with SIM. For the simple reason that if there are these circumbinary planets, we're not sensitive to that, because for that you need a third star. And certainly the SIM is a way, so we sort of do these two separately, then use SIM and look for that. At least to me, that's just a fun thing, though I don't necessarily expect, that'll be a success. The main problem really with the classical Keck outrigger array, the vision that was laid out some years ago to justify the thing, is it's the same problem as with SIM. Yes, you can look at a star, nearby star, and say, okay, here's some faint reference, potential reference stars, but they are faint, and we don't know whether we need just one. We need certainly one. We don't know whether we just can do with one, or we need three or four so that we can down select. So, and that, I think, is numerically important. Okay. So the general idea is right, but if that turns out to be a big barrier, then we may have a more restricted ground-based sample, which is why I'm sort of more interested in these very definite, where you don't need the reference stars.